Bucky's. Hey, Bucky's Auto Service Centers. Hey there, Bucky's. You know what? I'm going to work on a jingle for you, and by Friday, I will have it. I need some time.
Guaranteed.
I want to make it good.
Oh, okay.
As you said the other day, the jingle should be, you know, repeated numerous times until it gets into your head.
So that's right. It needs to be an earworm.
Anyway, 16 locations. I got to get something to rhyme with Bucky.
We'll be right.
Lucky.
Plucky.
Well, Bucky Service Station. He sent me around with station. That's hard.
Nation.
Wow, okay. Very good. Oh. Yeah. Oblation.
Oblation's good. Okay, everybody, no bad ideas. Chris.
Vacation.
I can't. I still know how to work the buttons here.
The station.
Station rhymes with station. That's good.
Thank you. All right. Oh, thank you, everybody. All right.
That's very meta.
On Friday. U.S. is pulling out of northern Syria. This, too, is meta.
Yeah.
Now, what a mistake this is. So we have done our best working with the Kurds to make sure that we could possibly contain ISIS and stop Russia and Syria. It was a couple of years ago. I think Putin said, hey, listen, don't worry. We'll go into Russia. We'll handle everything. We'll make sure that they don't have any chemical weapons. Don't worry about us. Let us come in there and work with you.
That's
so you're going
right.
to get Russia. You're going to get Syria. And hopefully China as well gets into the mix. And they all then join with Iran to blow up Israel or to do anything they can to disrupt the Middle East as much as they can. So we have been kind of in there as police.
Yeah.
More than just police. We drop a lot of bombs. We fly overhead. We contain people. We put them to the side. And we're just basically working from the air and the ground as well to maintain some sort of division in line to protect some of the people that are in there.
That's exactly right. And the Kurds have been the ones who've laid down their lives right. to prevent ISIS, to help collapse ISIS and then corral ISIS. They're responsible for something like 10,000 ISIS members, prisoners in all this. The idea here is that what we did is we provided information, intelligence, and air cover, and then they were the ones, they lost thousands, Kurds did, in their fight to contain ISIS.
Right.
Now, after a phone call from the Turkish president to President Trump, in which the Turkish president apparently said, hey, we're going to go in, come hell or high water, Trump said, okay, have at it, we'll go ahead and pull out. And that has all sorts of consequences. I know you have some sound. Maybe we should get some sound in.
This is from the Secretary of Defense this week is Mike Esper. And he was on Fox News. He told Chris Wallace, and Wallace seems flabbergasted by what's going on in Syria.
But I'm not quite sure I understand. So the Turks and their militias are committing atrocities against the Kurds, who are our allies. The Kurds are asking us for help, but we're going to pull out and allow the Kurds to go to the Russians and the Syrians? That doesn't seem to make much sense.
Well, look, the United States, first of all, doesn't have the forces on hand to stop an invasion of Turkey that is 15,000 strong, if you will, preceded by airstrikes and artillery and mechanized forces. Got to keep in mind, too, that, look, we didn't sign up to fight Turkey, a longstanding NATO ally, on behalf of the SDF. Again, this is a terrible situation. That's why... In the little over 2 months that I've been on the job, this has probably been the number one issue that I've dealt with week after week with our Turkish counterparts. We've done everything we can to dissuade them from doing this.
So ISIS is the hotbed where if you want to go on to graduate school and learn how to kill innocent people, you go to Syria and that's where you train. So the forces there in the United States know that most of the guys that then move into London or somewhere else, they said Syrian trained terrorist. How many times have we seen that in the news? So one of the reasons we were in there and had no fly zone is because we said we had to stop this production of terrorists that were coming right out of there. Nobody seemed to care. Off they would go to wherever they needed to go in order to kill people. So now, we can't stay in. It's a civil war that's been going on for how many years now in Syria? 7-8 years, it seems
at least.
Right. So at what point does the United States say, we can't keep doing this,
yes,
and you're going to have to work it out on your own?
But the problem is, and I think that is the president's instincts. He actually ran, his campaign saying, we're going to get out of all these entanglements. Mm-hmm. The problem is, what were we doing there, and what were we trying to prevent? We were trying to prevent Assad, who's horrible, president of Syria, and Russia, who's supporting Assad, both horrible, from moving in. Well, now the Kurds are saying the Turks are wiping us out. There have already been reports of execution along the side of the road. So the Kurds now, what do? They now turn to Assad and the Russians for support. So now they're aligning ourselves with them. The United States is just giving up any leverage we have at all there. And so now Syria and Russia have this bedrock of communication there vis-a-vis Turkey, and we're getting nothing out of it. It seemed much better to be in a position to, you know, sort of deter these kinds of things from happening, because now this could be extended into a real all-out war among various nations.
Then what's the blowback? Jim Mattis, Mad Dog Mattis, former defense secretary, says
it's in a situation of disarray right now. Obviously, the Kurds are adapting to the Turkish attacks. We'll have to see if they're able to maintain the fight against ISIS. We have got to keep the pressure on ISIS so they don't recover. We may want a war over. We may even declare it over. You can pull your troops out, as President Obama learned the hard way, out of Iraq. But the enemy gets a vote, we say in the military. And in this case, if we don't keep the pressure on, then ISIS will resurge. It's absolutely a given that they will come back.
You know, Peggy Noonan, Ronald Reagan's a great speechwriter, over the weekend said she thinks that basically Trump got rolled by Erdogan, the president of Turkey, and that he just sort of rolled over and said, okay, I'm out. Mm-hmm. Instead, there's a lot, as Chris Wallace was implying, there's a lot we could do with air cover. We could threaten them. The tweet that came out like 2 days after the tweet that announced our withdrawal, because now we're talking not just the 50 that were on the border there, we're talking about withdrawing all 1,000 of our troops in northern Syria entirely. The idea here is that if the president hadn't sort of stepped back, we wouldn't be in the kind of a mess we're in now.
Well, if it doesn't come to our shores in sort of a populist move with somebody like, what's the guy's name that's in there now that does the work? The young guy's been in there for 3 years, works with Trump, writes the speeches. What's his name?
Oh, Stephen Miller.
Stephen Miller.
Yeah.
If it's not on our shores, then we don't necessarily care. That's not a quote from him, but in just sort of an exaggerated view of, you know, on our land only, and we're not going to be in the business of being the world's police, and we're not going to be in the business of trying to sell and promote democracy in other places of the world that don't want it.
Okay, and listen, and I am okay. Listen, President Trump has his own view of the world, and he was elected, and so he has his own right to create his foreign policy. The problem is he didn't create a foreign policy. He just sort of had this knee-jerk seeming response to a threat from Erdogan, who we could do all sorts of damage with. I mean, they're in NATO.
Yeah.
Right after the blowback from the president in his tweet, he said, well, listen, if Turkey goes too far, I will, and then he put this in the tweet, obliterate their economy. Well, nothing has happened yet, and it's getting a little too late. The Kurds have already now aligned themselves with our enemies, and we're in worse shape because of it.
Well, also, Lindsey Graham says that we're going to put some serious heavy-duty sanctions on Turkey. Erdogan isn't very popular with some parts of Turkey anyway, so they could easily have that guy toppled if they wanted to. Maybe that's what they want to do. Get him in there, do something horrible, then put sanctions on him, crush the economy, and then get Erdogan to be thrown out.
Well, now, if I had this idea that that was their plan, that would make sense.
They can't tell you the plan, Tom. They've got a plan.
They don't need to tell me. They need to tell the military.
They don't need to tell everybody.
The military was gobsmacked by this
announcement. You can't leak this. That's how brilliant it is.
That's right.
Not even Shepard Smith is going to be able to report on this.
Just tell Giuliani.
Smith says,
the past 23 right here, since the day we launched Fox News Channel in 1996, the opportunities afforded this guy from small town Mississippi have been many. Even in our currently polarized...
Is he going to cry? I think he does.
Oh, do you?
I haven't heard this. I'm going to assume he does.
This nation, it's my hope that the facts will win the day, that the truth...
I know. He's not going to cry now. He had his chance. You know, small town kid from Mississippi.
Will always matter that journalism and journalists will thrive. I'm Shepard Smith, Fox News, New York.
Nice touch at the end.
Much like Trump's tweets, he caught everybody, or not everybody, but all the on-air staff off guard by that announcement. They showed one of the whoever he threw to was sort of gobsmacked too by that, and goes, wow, I didn't see that coming. And then they had John Roberts, the correspondent, kind of stumbling, fumbling around in response too.
Before we get into the back and forth between Shepard Smith and Tucker Carlson, this is, I found this from 2017. He was talking about the facts, and this is, listen to this, this is live on the air.
On Fox.
You know, it's sort of our job to let you know when things are said that aren't true. This president keeps telling untrue things, and he does it every single time he's in front of the microphone.
If someone were to stand up and say 2 plus 2 is 6, it's beholden on me to to correct that, because it isn't six, it's four. A lot of our audience is a right-wing audience. They're a conservative audience. They're a traditional audience. But it's not as if they don't understand that sometimes the facts aren't on your side. There is an enormous audience out there that won't believe that, those in the far right and far left, because so often the facts fly in the face of your own worldview. Sometimes your side is wrong. And when they are, I'm here to give the facts. And I don't really care what you think.
There you go.
Wow. Yeah, and the great thing about guys like Chris Wallace, I think, and Shepard Smith, they were like the last bastion of journalism on Fox News. Fox News is the most popular by far, but it's not because it gives better journalism. It's because it caters to its politicized audience. Mm-hmm. But at least there were some people that were originally there as journalists and trying to maintain the distinction between a talk show host, which we often acknowledge. Yes, we can say whatever we want to. Facts, you know, be damned.
And not held accountable for our opinions.
Exactly.
That's the other thing. My brother's like, does anybody ever come to you and say, that doesn't make sense? No. That's Tom's job.
Say that.
So the things that I'd seen from Time Magazine, MSNBC, everybody that's reporting on this thing, why did he leave? Apparently, he felt as if management did not have his back. When Tucker Carlson said something about a guest that was on Shepard Smith thing, then management didn't come in and say, Tucker Carlson, hey, stop saying that about other guests. Like this.
Last night on this network, during primetime opinion programming, a partisan guest who supports President Trump was asked about Judge Napolitano's legal assessment. And when he was asked, he said, unchallenged, Judge Napolitano is a fool. Attacking our colleague who's here to offer
That's not an attack, you know. But anyway.
Legal assessments on our air in our work home is repugnant.
By the way, you also said the same thing about Judge Napolitano.
I know, I was going to say, this is amazing to me that the guy he decides to defend is Judge Napolitano. I call him a crackpot, Judge Napolitano.
Don't get me started on his hairline. All right, and then Tucker Carlson responds the next day.
Repugnant.
We should save that.
Not clear if that was you or me, but someone's repugnant. Now, unlike maybe some dayside hosts, I'm not very partisan, and it was a sincere question.
Oh! What the hell?
Very partisan, and it was a sincere question. Is it a crime or not? So given everything that's happened in the last 24 hours, I just want to throw it to you again. Was it a crime or not?
Absolutely not.
All right. There goes Joe. Okay. And that was the breaking point for Shepard Smith. He walks away from $15 million.
Yeah, that's right. Up to $15 million a year. And he claims, and there's no disputing this from the Fox executives, they pleaded with him. He went to them a couple of months ago and just says, you know, this isn't worth it. I don't like what's happening to Fox. And they pleaded with him to stay, which I think is a smart move on their part because they are trying to. Right now, the guy who wrote the Vox article, I think, he's working on a book about the tensions, or maybe a big magazine article, the tensions within Fox News right now because of the impeachment issue. They don't know. There are people that are so pro-Trump, they don't know how to cover it, and there's a real clash between the news division and the opinion division inside Fox, and they're really wrestling with it because they realize there's going to be a post-Trump world.
Yes, there is.
And right now, they're so identified with Trump. Some people, you know, dismissively on the left call it Trump TV. But what is Fox going to look like post-Trump? Whether it's in the next 5 years or the next year, that's a real division. And Fox is trying to get its feet. And the fact that somebody like Shepard Smith leaves is probably concerning to some at Fox.
Well, I think part of the problem for anybody that watches news is Fox has more ratings because you have more people on the other side. Most conservatives see CNN, MSNBC, NBC, ABC, CBS, The New York Times, The Washington Post, The LA Times, Chicago Tribune is all having a left slant. So then they feel, well, we're not getting the fair shake there, so where can we go?
Yeah.
Well, we can go to the Wall Street Journal opinion pages, or we can go over to Fox. We can watch Fox because maybe they're covering stuff from a different angle that I know I'm not getting somewhere else. So because CNN, and we can admit CNN is not really journalists anymore, it's decided it wants to play the same game as Fox. It's like, okay, if you're going to take all those people, then we're going to take all these people, right? So now CNN discounts itself as a news organization. It's driven by opinion
and people, it's just driving more people over to Fox because people really believe as if Trump doesn't get something even close to a fair shake by the news organizations.
I don't think CNN still, and when it comes to international news, it still sees itself as a journalistic outfit.
Is that the international news that nobody cares about?
Well, maybe, but yeah. The idea is that they still have, I mean, there are serious CNN journalists covering, the front lines in Turkey and that kind of stuff. Yeah. So that I don't think that, I wouldn't accept your characterization. Now, I do think they may have more opinion people, but like Anderson Cooper, you can't compare Anderson Cooper to Tucker Carlson.
Tucker Carlson is so much better. Tucker Carlson's people are so good about getting people on.
Yeah, but it's not. CNN
is shocked at the people go on Tucker Carlson. Yeah. They know the show, right?
Yes.
It's like welcoming a animal into a trap that grabs hold of the animal's leg,
yeah,
and then
right.
The animal is forced to gnaw its own leg off
yes,
to get out of the trap.
To get off
and
the
then
segment.
Tucker goes, "Thanks for being with us," and they cut the mic. I knew he was going to say horrible things about. Why go on that show?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, if you're Jason Rance, it's great.
Well,
exposure.
That's Jason Rance is on that side.
But the thing is, I think Anderson Cooper does not come off as a partisan. Now, you guys on the right might see him as, see how he leans left or he's gay.
Yeah, but everybody knows that.
But the deal is that's not the tenor of his show isn't the kind of rabble rousing that Tucker Carlson's is.
No, it's a different type.
Yeah.
More subtle, sophisticated. That's right. That's all.
We're buttoned up.
All right, we can't get to this term. We have to because it is.
Yeah.
This guy, now what's he going to do?
Sit in jail.
How long is he in jail for?
I don't know. I don't know if I got the...
We'll find out how long he's in jail for. Certainly good at what he does.
Mm-hmm.
Man, Van Halen all day long. You know who's excited about this? Chris Sullivan. Here comes Van Halen, a song I've never heard of before. I don't even know what it is. Thanks, Tom McCurley, 1033, Cairo Radio, playing all the hits with Van Halen every single hour on the hour. Why can't this be love? Ah, I'm off today. Anyway, Andrew, he's in there kneecapping me.
He's pulling your leg. I think he's stretching
seconds.
These out.
He is. He did something. All right. Don't forget, this is supposed to be where Rachel Bell comes in here.
That's right.
With all her nonsense. She's in New Zealand.
That's right.
For a whole month.
Mm-hmm.
But still, Muckleshoot Casino, we've already cashed the checks. There's nothing you can do now, Muckleshoot. So this is a portion of Rachel Bell brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino.
That's good.
Good one, Tom. All right, let's see. Let's talk some politics. And this is kind of a fun thing. Somebody broke this down. They found out. Where are the Democratic candidates spending their money? The beautiful thing about Facebook, I've got a lot of friends that advertise on that. They love the fact that you can pinpoint. It used to be that like 60% of most commercials were heard by dogs. Unfortunately, dogs don't have a lot of expendable income. So you're wasting your money when the ad runs on television and the dog's sitting on the couch, but nobody else is. Facebook, what do you want to do? You want to send just to people that are this demographic and this age and did this and all the stuff that right to them. So I guess somebody for the Times or something, looked at where all the money is going from candidates on Facebook. Who wants who?
And interestingly enough, just to set the ground rules, they can find out all sorts of demographic information out of this. But Facebook does not allow them to explicitly target race or ethnicity.
Yes.
So we have no stats on who's focusing on African Americans or whites or Asian Americans and the like. So that is sorely lacking in this analysis. But other than that, we can see that they looked at the all the candidates, but the top three candidates. Who does Joe Biden go after? The older people.
Oh, yeah, okay.
People over 45, which is
that's most people on Facebook.
That's a big swath of people. Bernie Sanders goes for people younger, obviously, so he's like the counterflip of Biden.
Yeah.
But he tends to go more for men. Mm-hmm. There are more men that he caters to than to women. Joe Biden, on the other hand, heavily women.
Uh-huh,
so he
right.
has the old, if you look at
old
these
women.
Overlapping circles.
Old women love Joe.
Or older people and women people.
Right. Those are the battle axes.
And then you've got Elizabeth Warren, which might be an indication of a smart campaign. She's somewhere right in the middle.
Uh-huh.
Pete Buttigieg, goes for people around 45. You know, he's sort of in that.
He's not in this.
He's younger. What do you mean he's on?
He's not in
Facebook,
this.
Though? Oh, you don't think he's in the race?
That. It's three. Oh. You're down to three. Biden, Warren, and
I don't know. See, Pete Buttigieg on Saturday Night Live, they did a great bit, and he came on. You know, he was played by one of the news anchor guys on SNL, and he says, "I don't understand why I'm not doing better in the polls." You know, I'm one of the few candidates here that references contemporary events rather than the old. And when I say things, I make sense. I don't understand why I'm not doing better. I think he's still kicking around. I think he's in that. Yeah, you think it's down to three. It's only going to be either Sanders or Warren or Biden.
It's going to get down to who carries the black vote.
Well, right now, that's heavily Joe Biden.
Right.
But we don't have that kind of ethnic background right now.
If you can't get the black vote out, right, like Hillary was unable to do, you don't win. You got to get the black vote out, and you got to get them to vote for you.
Okay, well, now, to be fair to Hillary, she didn't get it out to Barack Obama's numbers, but
she did have
a huge swath of black voters. Still
not
something
enough.
Like 89% or something, but yeah. Anyway, and you can tell this based on where the money goes on Facebook, who they're trying to go for.
Okay, so Bernie was on ABC. He seems a lot dialed down more, doesn't he?
He's not shouting as much.
He's kind of quiet. So he's sitting there in a chair, sitting upright, and he's in a chair, and he was asked, I guess the 60 Minutes, who did this piece on ABC? Is this John Carl, whatever his name is?
Yeah, this is ABC, the George Stephanopoulos.
Talking to him about what's the difference between he and Elizabeth Warren.
I mean, Elizabeth considers herself, if I got the quote correctly, to be a capitalist to her bones. I don't. And the reason I am not is because I will not tolerate for one second the kind of greed and corruption and income and wealth inequality and so much suffering that is going on in this country today, which is unnecessary.
Okay.
So the best thing that Elizabeth Warren has going for him, going for her, is Bernie Sanders. She ought to keep Bernie Sanders on the trail with her because it's great for somebody to be swearing. Oh, the problem with Elizabeth Warren is she's a capitalist in her bones because the attack from the right is going to be she's a socialist, and so to Bernie she's not left leaning enough.
It is nice for people to reflect upon Bernie saying that against about her. He's not taking it as a criticism. He's saying, I want to get the quote right. The difference between the two of us, she is a capitalist to her bone. I don't know which bone that is. and is that her backbone. Native American bone? And he is not. He believes in a different system, one he's made up in his head that would be more effective than capitalism.
It's a corrective, yeah. He thinks that the capitalism allows for so many ills that his form of democratic socialism would cure.
No.
She, on the other hand, I think, thinks that capitalism at its core is healthy, but we need correctives around the fringes.
The government needs to be in charge. I'll just tell you, Elizabeth, if you happen to be listening, the great thing about capital, it's like liquid. You can pick it up and take it wherever you'd want once you capture it. So if you decide that you were going to any company that has $1 billion in sales, that they have to then come to the government and get some sort of certificate that they're allowed to, then they need to have a certain number of people on their board that need to represent workers and minority. If you want to put a bunch of restrictions in, what you'll see is the capital, the money that grows the economy, goes somewhere else to another country that is not as restrictive. So if you'd like to really see some real income inequality and you'd like to see unemployment go up, start to go after these businesses and start to go after capital, and capital will flee this country faster than you can say Elizabeth Warren.
But as she says, she's a capitalist through and through, so that's not it.
You can say a lot of things. I think North Korea is known as the Republic of North Korea. It's not really a republic. The idea, you can call yourself a capitalist, doesn't make you a capitalist. She can call herself a Native American. It doesn't make her a Native American just by saying, oh, I'm a capitalist.
Well,
if you're a capitalist, then explain to me how you want the government to come in and start playing, and you want the businesses to play by the rules of the government.
Because that's what the country is based on.
No,
the idea
not.
Is that there are rules of the road, and everyone has to play by those rules of the road.
No.
And when there are you know, inequalities or things that are out of balance, the government's there to kind of keep things in, you know, on the straight and narrow. That's it. And the argument, I mean, even Republicans, even the right, thinks the government has a role. And the question is, how big a role in containing the excesses of capitalism?
There is no such thing as excesses of capitalism.
Well, there is. The same way that somebody slavery is an excess of capitalism.
No. The idea when people start to use the term, well, that's an obscene profit. Once you start taking values and morals and placing it on top of money, you are then saying, well, this is what I think and this is what I feel about the amount of money. And then it becomes arbitrary. Well, and it's, well, that seems like a lot of money. Should that person have that amount of money? No. Yes. Based on what? Based on your own bias, your own prejudices? Well, I got an idea. Let people make as much money as they possibly can within the rules that they're not discriminating.
That's right. Within
rules. Within, there are rules. Okay. There should not be additional rules to capitalism, or it will leave this country, Tom. That's the difference.
First off, this is the greatest capitalist country in the world. It's not going to leave. We still are, and in our roots, capitalists. However, the way it's interesting, you've accepted
we're
some
not
rules,
the freest country. No, we are not the freest. We're not the freest country when it comes
I didn't
to capitalism.
Say we're freest.
We are
I
not
said
the freest.
The best, we're the most successful capitalist system in the world.
How much greater could we be if we got the shackles of the government off of it? And
speaking
this idea
of shackles and putting all the workers in shackles, that would not be very helpful. And that's why we have rules to make sure you can't do that. Child labor laws didn't exist until we saw the abuse of child labor, and then we put in laws about it.
The unions, unions rose up. They didn't like the competition of the kids. That's what the big part of it was.
Well, that's a good thing.
Yeah. They didn't want to have to compete against the kids because the kids are being paid a nickel.
The
kids are wanting being paid a nickel.
Exactly.
And the guy in the union wanted to be paid more.
So,
a lot of those kids, Tom, could get into some small, tight spots that those bigger guys couldn't. And they could free up
awful.
The fabric machine and get their little hands back out again before the machine started.
Keep talking. My side keeps winning the more you talk.
My side's winning. That's who we got in the White House. We'll take a break. Come right back.
Rue.
Those of you that are writing to us at MyNorthWest.com and texting as well at 98973 with some concern that this is the second time double shot of Van Halen on the
Tom
Bailey Show. That's a good reason. It's news-oriented.
That's right.
He's
Van Halen is newsworthy, which hasn't been the case for, what, 30 years? Cheap shot. Okay. Well, the problem is it's not we shouldn't be making light of this because it's somewhat serious. It turns out that Van Halen member has cancer and a theory. Eddie Van Halen, he's been apparently flying to Germany for treatments.
Mm-hmm.
He has throat cancer, and he has an unusual explanation for it.
He says, I play with a metal pick.
Yeah.
They're made of either brass or copper. They really let you wail on the strings, those metal picks. And he says, I hold them in my mouth a lot of times. So possibly the metals had somehow lurched into his bloodstream or got somehow caught up that they had to take out a third of his tongue.
Yeah.
And some of those cancer cells also migrated to the back, got into his throat. So this is what he has been dealing with. But he says it might be the metal. But then he quickly adds to what, Tom?
No doctor has approved this theory. They say they couldn't rule it out.
Yeah.
But the idea is, and the reason he's convinced, and this sounds like a layman's approach to cancer, it'd be like what I figured out. The part of his tongue where he got the cancer that had to be cut out was right where he held those picks in his mouth.
Yeah.
So he thinks that must be it. And we don't know, and the doctors haven't decided on that one way or the other. But the nice thing, the good news is that he's been, he was diagnosed in 2000.
Mm.
I mean, so he's been dealing with this for almost 20 years, and he still is performing. So it's more or less in remission, and he can continue. We were wondering what he would sound like with a third of your tongue. I wonder how difficult it makes to talk.
So he says, I basically lived in the recording studio that was filled with electromagnetic energy. So that's one theory.
Yeah.
He says, I smoked.
Yep.
And did a lot of drugs. And everything else.
Yeah.
But at the same time, my lungs are totally clear.
That's right. So he's kind of ruling out, a rock star's lifestyle is not, conducive to being, disease-free, but he says all the things that you would think he'd get, he didn't. The one thing about the throat and tongue cancer, it's his theory, and I'm not going to argue with him.
Let's see. I almost didn't come in today, Tom, because my mom had fallen on Friday, hit her head. My brother called me up in the afternoon saying, Mom's been taken to Bryn Mawr, from Bryn Mawr to Lankenau. And the doctor has run through the list of questions that doctors ask when someone is old. Mm-hmm. And my brother, being an attorney, immediately saw the doctor was basically laying out his plan, which is let's do nothing. And this is something you and I have talked about. Your mom, mm-hmm. God bless her, she is mm-hmm. still active. She's living on her own. And you said to me a number of weeks or months ago, you know, when do you know when that time comes when mom has to be taken from the house? So mm-hmm. my mom's Parkinson's got her out of the car. Then my mom's Parkinson's took her out of the house. And then my mom's Parkinson's put her into this stupid home that she was in. And there she was, one of the most dynamic people I've never, I ever see her. My brother wrote, I never saw her sit down. She was going constantly. And then she's, the ravages of this horrible disease have her sitting in a chair all day, which she just can't stand. She refused to use a cane or a walker, and she didn't want to be an old person. So she falls on Friday because she's so stubborn. She hits her head. She's unconscious. And now she is not even in ICU. She's just in a room somewhere there at Lankenau where they wait for God to take you.
So, yeah, the sad thing is they do not expect a recuperation.
No, there's no recuperation. So now we're just waiting. Mm-hmm. So on Saturday, I asked Nicole to book me a flight.
Mm-hmm.
And I did. I had the flight. And then I called my brother. I said, hey, I'm heading over to the airport now at 5 in the morning after no sleep. And he said, why? Mm-hmm. Why are you coming? Are you coming for yourself or are you coming for mom? If you're coming for mom, she's gone. If you're coming for yourself, you have to ask yourself, why? Do you need to prove something to me, to your sister, to mom, to anyone that might see you walk through the door after a 7-hour flight? Why are you coming? Where is your heart in this? Mm-hmm. And it really made me stop and think, like, why am I going there?
Yeah.
And is it because it's a scene from a movie, or does it feel like it's something you're supposed to do? I don't know. I remember when my dad got sick in Denver, and yeah. they said, hurry up, get here. I had a brain aneurysm. Mm-hmm. I walked in the door. You know what he said to me? What the hell are you doing here? I was like, thanks a lot, Dad. I spent $3,000 to come here in like 3 hours. But okay. So now here we are.
Yes.
And here I am.
And how are you feeling about your decision not to dash off? I mean, have you made peace with that?
Chuck said if you walked in, she's just laying there. She can't. She's just laying. She hasn't moved since Friday.
But what I always ask myself, and again, about these cases where people are vegetables,
yeah.
we don't know what it's like to be in that state. Maybe they
are. See, now you're killing me, Tom.
I know.